Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 14 of the Football Absurdity Podcast, the Better Late Than Never edition. My name is Jeff Crisco. I'm here flying solo today. We missed out on recording earlier this week because I was involved in a car accident on Wednesday, which is when we usually record. Back's a little messed up. I will be mostly okay. Sort of on the shelf for a couple weeks. Glued to my chair. Not anticipating going pretty stir crazy, but I am looking forward to being able to help you folks out today. Mike's not able to make it. He's stuck doing pro football focused stuff. He's busy helping out more people than I help, and I'm just going to be flying solo today. So we're going to do a little bit of a truncated episode. Going to take a look at, real quick, what I took away from Thursday Night Football. Granted, I was doped up on pain meds at the time I was watching it. So a few takeaways from week one, a few streams of the week, which is an idea that Mike had that we add on. And then a rundown of what we're looking for in week two, what might some actionable items be in each football game. So first off, Thursday Night Football. Couple things. The big reason that I was in on a lot of the Cincinnati Bengals this year, I thought they were going to have a much better season, was because they did do some work to strengthen their offensive line. And that was kind of on display through the first couple games of the season. They're averaging over 30 points a game. AJ Green has more touchdowns in the first 5 days of the season than Julio Jones had all last year. Granted, Billy Price, their center that they drafted in the first round, did have to leave early with a foot sprain. Seems like he should be mostly okay by the end of the season. So that's sort of a thing that you need to remember to look at is offensive line changes. It's not just the quarterback, tight end, running back, wide receivers out there. There are five guys out there tasked with defending the quarterback, road grading for the running back, and as Seattle has shown, you can't just throw five guys out there. They've had trouble running since Marshawn Lynch left because they just throw five guys out there. Russell Wilson is always under duress because they do that. And a breakdown in the Green Bay offensive line almost cost them the season in week one in Sunday Night Football. So when you're looking at guys for next year, always try to take a quick look at what offensive line changes have happened. For the rest of week one, taking a quick rewind because we were going to do this on Wednesday before Thursday Night Football. My five big takeaways were that I was dumb for doubting the Chiefs. They're going to have a varied and prolific offense this year. So angle yourself towards getting Chiefs, angle yourself towards Chiefs and DFS because it looks like they are not going to have a strong defense at all. The only one that I would try to hold off on is Sammy Watkins. They didn't really do a great job of getting him involved in week one. It was more the Patrick Mahomes, Kareem Hunt, and more than anything else, Tyreek Hill show. Now, this didn't leave a lot left for either Travis Kelce or Sammy Watkins, like I said, but you're not cutting Travis Kelce. Sammy Watkins, maybe if you have to make a roster decision, he might be a casualty for you, but don't go out to cut him just to cut him. He's extraordinarily talented, but he might be the first guy that has to go in a roster crunch. Second thing was, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I was kind of right about Buffalo and what I thought it meant for LeSean McCoy. They didn't even field what seemed to be a professional NFL offense out there. It was a absolute disaster against the Ravens. And as we saw week two against Cincinnati, the question was, are the Bills that bad or are the Ravens that good? Well, the Ravens aren't that good. They lost to Cincinnati on Thursday Night Football and they had staged a comeback, but they let AJ Green score three touchdowns on him in the first like 17 minutes of the game. And that was that. So the answer to that question is yes, Buffalo does seem to be that bad. So stream against Buffalo. They got the Chargers this week. I think the Chargers defense, because they're so banged up, will make Buffalo look better than the Ravens defense did. But I still don't think that Buffalo is going to be great. I would probably go with Kelvin Benjamin, try to sell high on the next big LeSean McCoy game, and then divest myself of them entirely. Third takeaway was something that I really feel dumb about. Mike brought it up on the first episode for the season, and it was Derrick Henry. I thought that Derrick Henry would get much more of the touches than Deion Lewis did, but Deion Lewis did out-touch him in week one. And not only did Deion Lewis out-touch Derrick Henry, he out-performed him with those touches as well. So it's starting to look like Derrick Henry might be the short side of the platoon. Probably should have seen that coming with the more varied back in Deion Lewis. But at the same time, I'm not ready to go away from Derrick Henry in positive game scripts. The only problem with that is if Marcus Mariota's hand injury is as bad as it seems, the Titans might be starting Blaine Gabbert, which means we might not know when they have a positive game script, which means we might not know when it's Derrick Henry time. If you can trade on the name, I would definitely do it. But if you went went wide receiver, and then snagged LeSean McCoy and Derrick Henry, you better hope that those wide receivers are performing, because your running backs are looking kind of bleak to start the season. Speaking of running backs that look kind of bleak to start the season, Le'Veon Bell's holdout's not going as well as he thought it would. James Conner just absolutely lit up the Browns in week one, and that was sort of what a lot of people, myself included, thought might happen because he is taking over that Steelers running back role. That Steelers running back role that when Lev Bell has been out in the past was filled by guys like D'Angelo Williams. They get 95% of the touches. There is no committee in Pittsburgh, no matter who the running back getting the ball is. Now, James Conner is an extraordinary talent, and he did a lot with the ball, but pretty much anybody that's a warm body is going to get 20 touches a game in that Pittsburgh offense, which means at least 80 yards from that player. So James Conner doing great. My take on the Le'Veon Bell holdout is at this point, he has nothing to gain by coming back. So I'm thinking this thing goes all the way to week 10. Week 10 comes in, and he will slide right back into the starter role. Which means, what do you do if you're a James Conner owner? Okay, so there's one of two things that you can do. You can either trade James Conner now and take a guy that'll help you all season, a guy that's been struggling. I was going to say a Devonta Freeman, but he's out. He's already hurt. Maybe a guy like a Kenyon Drake. That would be amazing. I have James Conner in a couple leagues. If you're in those leagues with me, hit me up. I'll take Kenyon Drake off your hands if you want James Conner. The other thing that you can do is, if you are a James Conner owner, in week, let's say, 5 or 6, sidle up to the Le'Veon Bell owner. Say, hey, I got this player XYZ, this high upside wide receiver. Why don't you toss me your Le'Veon Bell? I'll make this my headache. And, in exchange, I'll trade you, this Jarvis Landry in PPR or another top 15 wide receiver, an Emmanuel Sanders, if things go how I think they might go for him this year. Sort of a guy that you drafted as a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4, who's performing above board for you, more than you thought they would. So that would be a good thing that you might be able to do if you are a James Conner owner, is go get Le'Veon Bell, secure that backfield. You know, maybe you have to overpay a little bit because you're going to sit with him on your bench. But my big fear for myself and other James Conner owners is James Conner rocks it till week 10. You slide him in, he's your running back 1, running back 2. And then all of a sudden come playoffs, you don't have James Conner anymore. So if I was a James Conner owner, which I am, I'm either trying to move James Conner for somebody that'll help me all year, or I'm playing the waiting game and hoping that Lev Bell doesn't come back. And in week 5, 6, 7, maybe reaching out to the Le'Veon Bell owner and saying, hey, you know, I'll make this one my problem. Because without that first round pick, top 4 overall pick in pretty much every single draft, that owner is going to be struggling. They're going to want somebody to take Le'Veon Bell off their hands to help them out, because they'll see, and you can leverage this, that if they lose 1, 2, 3 more games while they wait for Le'Veon Bell to come back, then it won't matter when he comes back, because they're not going to be in the playoffs anyways. So go ahead, try to leverage that. The last thing, which is something that I'm going to be watching for this weekend, you'll see, the Saints defense got 5 touchdowns hung on him by Ryan Fitzmagic, 4 passing, 1 on the ground, because, Ryan Wheels Fitzpatrick, that guy, is always a threat for a long run. That's sarcasm. They got, the Saints got torched by the Buccaneers, who nobody really thought that they were going to do a whole heck of a lot while Jameis Winston is out. So they, the Saints were a great defense last year, and they were one that you wanted to kind of fade by the end of the year because Lattimore was amazing and the defense around him was really rounding into shape. But if the Saints are going to be as bad as they were in the past, that means two things. It means one, the classic Saints shootout is back. That means that you're going to go ahead and start everybody playing against the Saints. If they're going to suck out loud like they did on in week one, then play everybody playing against the Saints, no matter who they are. The second ramification of that is it's Drew Brees bounce back season, baby. It means that Brees is going to have to throw the ball to catch up. He had 45 pass attempts, which he had just once last year. So if the defense can't help him out like he needs them to, then he's going to have to put the game into his own hands. And that means a whole lot of fantasy points for you and yours. So those are the five big things I really took away from week one in terms of season-long ramifications. I was wrong about the Chiefs. The Bills suck. Derrick Henry and the entire Titans offense really has been troublesome, especially considering how many people invested in guys like Corey Davis, guys like Delanie Walker, who's out for the season, guys like Deion Lewis, Derrick Henry. It's kind of a mess there in Tennessee again, and we had hoped that Matt LaFleur would fix it, but it seems through one game that that's not quite the case. Now, I'm going to go ahead and get into my streams of the week. This is one guy at each position. You can see a full list of streamers on the website on footballabsurdity.com. But I picked my favorite at each position to sort of go over real quick with you. These are guys that are available in at least 50% of Yahoo leagues. Starting on Friday night is when I look at the numbers, and that's when I write the articles. My first guy that I wrote this down last night, but there's some breaking news that Josh Gordon will not play on Sunday. So it does kind of put the damper on my first guy, which is Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor was really bad as a real-life NFL quarterback last week. He was 15 for 40. Granted, it was in the rain, but at the same time, it was still kind of worse than you would expect even when you adjust for rain. So that does kind of drag his ownership percentage back. But at the same time, he does have that quarterback that runs cheat code where a quarterback passing yards are worth 1 point per 25 yards. Running yards are worth 1 point per 10 yards. So if you think about it that way, 1 yard is running is worth 2.5 yards passing. So these running quarterbacks have this cheat code or Konami code, as some analysts call it. Tyrod Taylor has it. He was good last week because he ran for 77 yards and a touchdown. This week, he won't have the rain. He'll be in New Orleans in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So rain will not be a concern. At the same time, he'll have the fast track. The indoor stadiums tend to have faster fields. Because they're usually artificial turf and they are sort of optimized. There's not a lot of natural stuff to worry about. So the reason that I like him this week is, as I mentioned before, something screwy with the New Orleans defense. Ryan Fitzpatrick hung 5 touchdowns on him last week. And if you ask me which quarterback I'd rather have, it would be Tyrod Taylor over Ryan Fitzpatrick circa 2018. So he's a good stream this week. He's available in 69% of Yahoo leagues. He was only 31% owned when I wrote this last night. If you want to see the other two guys, go ahead, check it out on the website. But he's my favorite streaming quarterback this week. My favorite streaming wide receiver is someone that I said earlier, their team does not field an NFL caliber offense. It is Kelvin Benjamin of the Buffalo Bills. Here's the reason why. No wide receiver last week who had more than 100 air yards. So what air yards are when a quarterback throws the ball to a wide receiver, whether they catch it or not. The distance the ball traveled down the field. So if you throw a 60-yard bomb, the wide receiver gets credited with 60 air yards, whether he caught it or not. It's sort of a measure of how much opportunity a player has, because you can look at targets, but five targets all in the flat do not equal the potential fantasy production as five targets 15 yards down the field, 20 yards down the field, 30 yards down the field. So air yards was developed to sort of measure the opportunity that a player might have. So back to what I was saying about Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin had 10 receiving yards in week one. The Bills were a mess. It's like they switched helmets. Like the Ravens got the offensive play call helmet and they were able to know exactly what the Bills were running at all times. Kelvin Benjamin's 10 receiving yards represent the biggest gap between air yards and receiving yards in week one. He had 195 air yards. That was the fourth most air yards on the week. That makes sense because they benched Nathan Peterman, went with Josh Allen, who throws it over a mountain. But my joke, you know, he needs a target as big as the other side of the mountain. I really hope Josh Allen doesn't get better so I can use that forever because that's probably my favorite joke. So he's getting a Chargers defense that had the Chiefs drop 38 points on him last week. And we all saw Tyreek Hill chew him up multiple times. We saw deep bombs. We saw little weird shovel passes from Patrick Mahomes. And I think that there will be opportunity to score and to do work against this defense. And I don't know who will really do it in the passing game except for Kelvin Benjamin. So I see him as a big quote-unquote sleeper this week, even though he is 48% owned. He's only available in slightly over 50% of Yahoo leagues. If you're looking for a deeper guy, Dante Pettis. I like Dante Pettis this week because Marquise Goodwin is out, and I think the Jets just scored another touchdown on the Lions, even though they haven't played since Monday. I mean, they just... the Lions laid over and died. No pride in those Lions. Huh? Anybody? No? Okay. Fair enough. The third guy that I like this week for a running back sleeper, it's sort of specific. It is Nyheim Hines of the Indianapolis Colts as they go to Washington. So there's a couple reasons why I like this this pick this week. So Marlon Mack is probably coming back this week. And Marlon Mack and Jordan Wilkins play the same role in the offense. So they are both sort of your traditional first and second down thumpers. They're not as prolific in the passing game as Nyheim Hines is, and they will probably be splitting duties, trying to figure out which one of them is going to become the lead back. That leaves sneaky little Nyheim Hines back there as the scat back. He had 9 targets last week. So what do those 9 targets mean in terms of opportunity? Well, he was third on the team behind T.Y. Hilton and Jack Doyle. You're going to want to angle yourself towards guys who are catching passes from Andrew Luck, who, by the way, looked to be Andrew Luck again. Some questionable passes at times, but, you know, that guy's got a processor that few have. So he had 9 targets last week. So I crunched the numbers, and since 2008 in a half-point PPR, a running back scores 1.167 fantasy points per target in half-point PPR. And just 2/3 of a fantasy point every time they rush the ball. This includes touchdowns in it as well. So what this means is that for every target that a running back gets, it's worth about half a fantasy point more than any rush attempt that a running back gets. So if you do the math on those 9 targets that he had last week, that's the equivalent of a running back getting just under 16 rushes in terms of fantasy points expected. So you can see there that that's a sneaky high volume that you might be able to jam into your lineup if, say, for example, you're a Leonard Fournette owner or a Devonta Freeman owner who doesn't have good options on your bench. Nyheim Hines in a PPR or a half PPR league should be able to help you out this week. I love so many tight ends this week. It was very hard for me to go ahead and pick one. You know, I'll go with the same guy I went with last week, even though I was wrong. There are a lot of underlying factors that tell me, no, maybe I was right. That's Ricky Seals-Jones. So the reason I like Ricky Seals-Jones is because he played on a torrid pace last season, and all he needed to become a week-in, week-out fantasy football tight end contributor was additional opportunities, additional targets, you know, just to have a full role in that offense. And Jermaine Gresham's injury has afforded him that. In week one, he played over 90% of snaps. He had the third most targets on the team behind Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, which nobody on that team is getting more targets than Larry Fitzgerald or David Johnson. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. So really, if you're trying to find any other opportunity in that team, you're going to go ahead and chase the third guy who's getting targets. He did have the sole red zone target that did not go to Larry Fitzgerald or David Johnson as well. And this week they get the Rams. Now the Rams are a tight end funnel defense. What that means is they, in the passing game, I mean, they have just prolific defensive backs. Their linebackers are just okay, but their strength is really their cornerbacks. Their safeties are pretty good, but they don't come up to help against tight ends so much. And what that means is if Arizona knows what they're doing, which is questionable, we don't know if Arizona knows what they're doing yet, they're going to go to Ricky Seals-Jones, and they're going to go to Larry Fitzgerald out of the slot. So that means more opportunity for Ricky Seals-Jones, a guy who all I wanted to see from him to go full bore into him was additional opportunity this season with the new coaching staff. So I'm going to lean at Ricky Seals-Jones again. Austin Seferian-Jenkins is also a good call. He's the king of the near touchdown. Andrew Norwell had a hands of the face penalty that had an 11-yard ASJ touchdown called back last week. If he had gotten that touchdown pass for an actual touchdown, he would have sat at 36 yards and a score, which is 9.6 fantasy points, which is plenty good for a starting tight end. This has been a bugaboo for Austin Seferian-Jenkins. I don't know what it is. He last year had 3-4 touchdowns that were called back for dumb ticky-tack reasons. I believe twice he was the recipient of the ball squirts out as he's crossing the goal line and it goes out of the end zone and it's the other team's football, which forget the catch rule. It's misinterpreted. That might be the dumbest rule in football. Sorry. If you want a penalty for going outside the end zone, then you lose 5 yards from the line of scrimmage or the ball goes back to the 10-yard line. Something. The ball is almost a touchdown and it squirts out and goes out the back of the end zone. And then all of a sudden it's the other team's ball is the worst rule in football. And it's possibly the worst rule in sports. Another guy that this is sort of a Hail Mary option. I liked him coming out of college. I watched his tape and I said, hey, Ian Thomas, all he needs is a Greg Olsen injury for a chance at a huge target volume, a lot of opportunity. Well, Greg Olsen's foot is messed up again. It's broken again. Same foot that he had surgery on last year. Which was one of the reasons why I was shying away from Greg Olsen, because his foot surgery has a high rate of recurrence for additional surgeries. But he's hyper-athletic tight end. He's drawn comparisons to guys like Delanie Walker, may he rest in peace. And it's a, you know, super specific dark throw. You know, if you're looking for just a touchdown, it's a possibility. They're taking on Atlanta, who did a pretty good job against Zach Ertz in week one, but did let Dallas Goedert almost fly free for a touchdown again in week one. I like his talent. It usually wins through in the NFL, but maybe not in his first game. It's a desperation play at best. So now that we've taken a look at my sleeper picks for the week, we're going to shift our attention to what I'm looking for in games this weekend. And if you guys are sorry of my voice or tired of my voice, I'm very sorry. To be completely honest with you, I'm tired of speaking. Now I see why podcast hosts have two people. But what we're going to take a look at, or what I'm going to take a look at this week, is just what I'm looking for in each game that you should probably be looking for too, to help you manage your fantasy teams. So the first, I'm going to go through the order that they are on NFL.com along the header there. First game is Carolina and the Falcons. Really what I'm looking for here is Julio Jones red zone usage. Now, that was a problem last season. That was a problem in week one. I have to believe that, you know, Steve Sarkisian, he is a professional play caller. He has to eventually learn that you can't just keep pulling the best wide receiver or one of the top three wide receivers in the NFL off the field when you're on the goal line. I understand that you want to have a jumbo package out there of your quarterback, a fullback, a running back, and all offensive line, eight offensive linemen. You can do that if you want, but make it seven offensive linemen and put Julio out wide. Make the defense think about Julio Jones. He's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and it's honestly stupid that they keep pulling him off the field to run Devonta Freeman or Tevin Coleman into the backs of guys who are all bunched up on the line because they know they're not going to throw to Austin Hooper. They're not going to throw to Mohamed Sanu. They're not going to throw to these other guys that they have out on the field. It's just dumb. It's madness. Put Julio Jones out there. Make other defenses at least account for Julio. Now, I understand they say, oh, Julio gets doubled and triple teamed in the red zone. Good. If you're Steve Sarkisian, that's what you want. You want two, three guys accounting for Julio Jones because that means fewer guys in the box. That means fewer guys accounting for your running back. But if you're just going to line up eight guys on the line of scrimmage, nine guys on the line of scrimmage, and just bash it into the line, well, it's a math problem. Tell me how 11 guys don't beat nine guys more times than they don't. It's stupid. It's dumb. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm hoping that they pull their heads out of their rear ends and start to get Julio Jones a lot more red zone targets and quality red zone targets. I know the statistic that Matt Ryan is something like one of his last 20 passes throwing to Julio Jones in the red zone. The next game is the Chargers and Buffalo. And what I'm looking for in this game is twofold. One thing for the Chargers, one thing for the Bills. For the Chargers, Austin Eckler, he had an interesting role last week. He had 10 touches. But there was a quote after the game that had me scratching my head and had me thinking about Eckler some more. Philip Rivers likened him to Danny Woodhead, who had a very specific role and a lot of targets and a lot of opportunity in that role. So I want to see how they use Austin Eckler in game two. Chances are they will probably limit Melvin Gordon's load when they're up huge at the end of the game and run Austin Eckler out there, because Gordon is one of the few guys who can carry the ball 20 to 25 times week in, week out, but that's the type of production that you kind of want to stay away from because that's how running backs break in this day and age. The other thing I'm looking at is Kelvin Benjamin. I talked about him earlier. There's somebody's got to catch balls in this offense, and it's probably going to be Kelvin Benjamin. I doubt it's Zay Jones. I doubt it's you, me, the guy behind you in line at the grocery store while you're listening to this, whoever else is on that Bills depth chart, because it is bleak. In the Minnesota and Green Bay game, really, I don't know what you can take from Green Bay because either Aaron Rodgers is not playing or Aaron Rodgers is hurt, both of which are still up in the air at this point. But in either likelihood, there's not much that you're going to be able to take from this offense because it's going to be a hyper-specific game plan to protect Aaron Rodgers. Means a lot of Jamal Williams, means a lot of short routes. You might see more from Jimmy Graham, who had a horrendous week one, just absolutely awful. But you might see more of the short routes to try to protect Aaron Rodgers. So there's not really much you can see from Green Bay. On the Minnesota side, Dalvin Cook kind of ran into a buzzsaw when he was running the ball on the ground against the 49ers. And the 49ers aren't really known for their run defense. Granted, Fred Warner, who's a rookie, looked great. And it seems like the defensive linemen they've invested in, except for Solomon Thomas, have seemed to have developed. But I'm kind of worried that this broken down Minnesota offensive line might not be able to block enough to get Dalvin Cook the same opportunity that he got in his four games last year. So keep an eye on what Dalvin Cook does, because it might be an opportunity to sell on the name while he's not really producing, kind of intentionally sell low because the other guy thinks that they are buying low. I kind of talked about what I would want to look at the Cleveland and New Orleans game earlier in my week one takeaways. I'm worried New Orleans is bad now. That's a huge problem. Not their offense, but their defense. They were amazing last year, and they just got absolutely torched by Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is completely unacceptable. That is not something that should happen to an NFL defense in the year of our Lord 2018, to get blown up by Ryan Fitzpatrick. Miami, let's see, it's Saturday at 3:11 p.m. on the West Coast, and I'm getting news that Miami and Tennessee have just finished their game. So Miami then will turn around and play the Jets tomorrow. Miami, we need to see more about what's going on with this offense. We kind of need to throw out the game plan from week one because the game took 7 hours because of delays. Frank Gore got a lot of run. Kenny Stills seemed to be the only guy in town in the passing game. But if Frank Gore does get more run this game, it might be a buy low opportunity for Kenyon Drake. It might be time to go pick up Frank Gore. Kind of depends on how you feel about that offense. I personally believe in Kenyon Drake. I loved Frank Gore, but you know, my saying is father time is undefeated, and he's the he's 34 years old now. Little getting up there in years to take significant touches as a running back. For the Jets side, I want to see if Sam Darnold can recreate what he did in week one. Looking for passes to Quincy Enunwa and to see how he uses Robbie Anderson, because Robbie Anderson was mostly MIA in week one except for the touchdown pass. So it might be time to divest shares of Robbie Anderson if Sam Darnold just prefers Quincy Enunwa. Unless Robbie Anderson is the new Will Fuller, touchdown or bust, we'll see. The Chiefs and the Steelers. This would be, as Adam Azer on CBS Sports calls it, your bonanza game of the week. Start all your Chiefs, start all your Steelers. Just watch and enjoy. There's not much to take away from this except maybe see if they're shying away from Travis Kelce again. See they being the Chiefs. See if James Washington can get deep on these guys because James Washington of the Steelers, that is, because last week the Chiefs allowed four guys to get over 80 air yards against them, which means that they were getting behind the defense. The problem was is that Mike Williams, Travis Williams, and Kelvin Benjamin were dropping footballs. Those guys aren't quite the same quality of deep ball receiver, except for Mike Williams, as James Washington is. So it's a chance to maybe in DFS throw a little James Washington in there, sprinkle it on top. If you're trying to get some get to the top of that GPP, he'll probably be pretty lowly owned. Philly and Tampa Bay, it's a matchup of two quarterbacks that I don't know what to make of right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick was really good in week one. Nick Foles was really bad in week one. That's sort of what I'm watching is that quarterback matchup. There's not much else to watch there except for maybe the emergence of Chris Godwin for Tampa Bay and maybe sorting out what this backfield looks like in Philly without Darren Sproles, who got a big chunk of touches in week one. Houston and Tennessee. We want to see what's going on with this Houston offense. Last week, it seemed as though Deshaun Watson turned back into a pumpkin, which, oh me, oh my, who saw that coming? Except for two thumbs pointed squarely at this guy. Deshaun Watson had some unsustainable production, which seems, in week one at least, you know, Bill Belichick, he schemes to stop what you do best. Deshaun Watson laid an egg in week one. So checking to see what that looks like in week two. Also, I talked about it earlier, but checking to see what this Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry split is going to look like. Indianapolis and Washington, there's really only one thing to look at in this game, and that's the Indianapolis backfield. I mentioned it earlier. You got Jordan Wilkins, Nyheim Hines, Marlon Mack, Christine Michael. And in a few weeks, Robert Turbin returns. So you're going to kind of want to see who does best in this backfield and either divest from it entirely or maybe go out and snatch some pieces if you feel strongly about something going on in that backfield. Arizona and the Rams, there's not much to watch for in this game because I don't think Arizona is that good, and I think the Rams have a chance to be, well, in my week one power rankings, they're listed as the best team in the NFL. So this one's going to be a blowout. There's a chance that the Rams come back late in the game, but I'm not too enthusiastic, we'll say, about it much on the Rams side. Or, I'm sorry, much on the Cardinals side. Except for the big two, and then maybe Ricky Seals-Jones as a sleeper. Detroit and San Francisco. Two things I'm looking for is both quarterbacks threw multiple interceptions last week and looked pretty bad doing it. Jimmy G looked a lot better than Matt Stafford. But this is going to be Jimmy G's big homecoming, where he's for sure the franchise quarterback. And as a 49ers fan, season ticket holder, that's what I'm looking forward to. I also think that Jimmy G is going to blow these Lions out of the water. So that's what I'm looking for as a Niners fan. Oakland and Denver, I mean, check your milk cartons because there's probably Amari Cooper's face on it. Guy was MIA in week one. John Gruden's talking about easier said than done to get Amari Cooper involved in the offense. Gruden is making $100 million over the next 10 years. And so far what he's done is alienate veterans, send the best player that the Raiders have had in two decades packing for nothing, and then says that he didn't want to be a Raider. And now he's saying that the best offensive player that they have, it's easier said than done to get him involved in the passing game. This man is going to make $100 million over the next decade to make that a possibility. He's not here. He's not being paid to say, well, you know what? It's really hard to get Amari Cooper open, or it's really hard to get Amari Cooper opportunities in this offense. He's your best player. Get him the football. That's the problem. He's your best offensive player, and you're not scheming to get him the football. Don't talk like you have no role in this, or you have no choice but to not give the ball to Amari Cooper. It's your team, John Gruden. Get Amari Cooper the ball. And that's what I'm looking for you to do this weekend. New England and Jacksonville. New England and Jacksonville, it's the running backs on both sides. Is Leonard Fournette playing? Is Rex Burkhead playing? Is Sony Michel doing anything? Is James White breaking out? Is TJ Yeldon taking over for Leonard Fournette? It's really, this game is more, instead of what the game looks like, it's what the pregame injury report looks like, what the inactives look like. That's really what I'm taking away from this game. I mean, Bortles is going to do Bortle things. Brady is going to do Brady things. It's just a question of, you know, whose defense stops it. Because that's a real, the Pats defense can probably stop the Jags offense. Can the Jags defense stop the Pats offense? That's the big question in this game. But really what I'm looking for is how this running back shakes out in this game. Giants and the Cowboys, your requisite Sunday Night Football NFC East matchup. Fun fact, the Giants and the Cowboys play each other exclusively on Sunday Night Football every single week, every single year. They just play against each other. That's the only teams they play. It's not true, but it really feels like that. What I'm watching for in this game is what is going on with this Dallas offense. They got crushed, just absolutely manhandled, mauled by the Carolina Panthers last week. So I'm checking to see what Dak's doing, what Zeke's doing. Zeke's going to do Zeke things. There's no problem there. But how these wide receivers shake out, Michael Gallup, Allen Hurns, is it time to pull the ripcord on your shares of the Dallas offense entirely? Or is there going to be anything to even salvage out of that offense other than Zeke? Finally, we finish up with Seattle and Chicago. There's a lot to look for in this game. Doug Baldwin has been ruled out as of this afternoon. So who does Russell Wilson go to? Is it Brandon Marshall again? Is it Tyler Lockett? Who's he reaching out to make up for the fact that his best wide receiver that he's ever played with is gone? So that's what I'm looking for on the Seattle side. Also, what's going on with Chris Carson, Rashad Penny? On the Chicago side, I need to see what this team looks like off script. Last week, they were crushing the Packers when they were on script. The moment that Mitchell Trubisky went off script, everything fell apart, everything died, and it became one of the greatest regular season comebacks in NFL history in week one. So I need to see what this team does on Monday Night Football. So there you have it, sort of a truncated version of the NFL week two, what we're looking for, NFL week one recap. Didn't have Mike this week, just sort of ran it solo. Sound a little bit different because it's just me and Audacity today. No Google Hangouts, no nothing else. So I appreciate you folks listening. You can go to the website, footballabsurdity.com. We have weekly start sit questions where we look through whether you should start or sit a player. We have sleepers at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and Waleed does defense and special teams. Waleed does waiver wires every week as well. We have hot takes from crazy people. We have injury reports. We have everything you need. And we finally have a motto. Our analysis is no joke, but the jokes are. You can follow us on FBall Absurdity on Twitter, Football Absurdity on Instagram. We have not posted anything. We will never post anything, but go ahead, give us a follow on Instagram so that I get that dopamine rush from seeing a follow. I'm Jeff Crisco. Sorry this one was a little light this week. I am battling a whole host of pains coming out of my neck and back. You can follow me on Twitter, like I said, at JM Crisco. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. We'll have Mike in tow. We'll have jokes. We'll have more than just one guy rambling into a microphone in his office. Thanks for listening.